Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If you were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders, but now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him, but it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising.
Hello, afternoon. What is truth? That's quite a question, isn't it? What is truth? I guess you can ask that in a whole number of ways. Some more profound than others. Sunday afternoon we were playing a board game at home, and it was a Monopoly-like game, and my son, age 10, happened to be the banker, and it got to the end of the game, we were counting up the money, and somehow, cleverly, I guess, because we didn't realise he was winning by quite such a margin, he seemed to have won the game by several hundred million pounds. He said, "Oh, I've got, whatever it was, 600 million. Is that true?" Well, what do you mean by true? Was his response. I thought, oh, God, this is a slightly profound existential moment. I just meant, have you cheated? And of course, you can get it in that sort of sense. And he had indeed cheated about that. You can get it. I guess here it's the politician's answer mainly. This man, this leader, Pontius Pilate. What is truth? What does it matter? Power. Power is what matters. You know, in George Orwell's novel 1984, freedom. Freedom is the ability to say 2 plus 2 equals 4. Power is the ability to make 2 plus 2 equal 5. That's what Winston Smith is told under duress before, remember, where the rats eat his face. It's very unpleasant scene. What is truth, says the poet? Who cares, really, as long as I get to do what I want? Well, then there's a sort of, I guess we're in a culture now which... Well, does it work? It's really what we care about. What is truth? Well, it doesn't really matter. In one sense, it's the heart of postmodern thought. What is truth? You have this sort of Aussie definition of postmodernism. I was told this a little while ago. Two Aussie sailors find themselves in London. Sorry if you're Australian. This is just sort of offensive cultural nonsense, really. But anyway, two Aussie sailors find themselves in London and they stumble into a bar and they get absolutely hammered. And stumble out of the bar and have got no idea what's going on. So one turns to the other and says, what's going on? Where are we? And all of a sudden, in the mist, there's a sort of fog in London that day. They see a naval officer walk by and they can see he's an English naval officer. And they say, "Here, Pommy, where are we?" He says to them, "Do you know who I am?" Because he's an officer. He goes, "Street man, I don't know who you are, but golly, we're in trouble. We don't know where we are. You don't know who you are. The whole world's gone to rack and ruin." And that's apparently meant to be an Aussie definition of postmodernism. We don't know who we are, don't know where we are. We don't really care as long as we're having a good time. That's really terribly offensive culturally. But what is truth? How do you know? That's Pilate's question that comes up in this passage. Now, as Phil said, we've just got 3 weeks or so before Easter, and we're looking at the trial and then death of Jesus Christ in John's Gospel. And here Jesus comes before Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor. it's one of the many places in the Bible where the sort of secular evidence completely coincides with what the Bible says. So you can go to your secular histories and we know that there's a man, the Roman governor is Pontius Pilate. He ruled between 26 and 36 AD. So you can certainly pin down Jesus' trial between those dates. Much coinage showing that he was the ruler at the time. The non-Christian historians will tell you he's a violent thug. Philo will tell us he loves executions arbitrarily without trial. But he's a politician. You get that clearly from John 18. He's a politician. And he's not in a good mood. Pontius Pilate was a man who loved to be at Caesarea Maritima. That's his seaside house. He's a man who likes to be sunning himself on a sunbed in the Med. But it's Passover, so he has to go to Jerusalem to make sure there's no hassle. So here's a man who wants to be on his sunbed in the Mediterranean, and it's a bit like he's stuck in the wrong end of a football stadium surrounded by a load of hostile Jews. He's got to make do with the hoi polloi in a stinking city. He doesn't want to be there. No doubt he's hot and he's angry and irritated. And then the Jewish leaders come along with this irritating man, Jesus. Verse 28, the Jewish leaders take Jesus to the palace of the Roman governor. It's early morning. They don't want to go in to enter the palace. Pilate comes out to them and says, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" They slightly fumble their answer. Verse 30, "If he were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." What sort of, this is a vague answer, isn't it? What's the charge? He's a criminal. That's why he's here. What's the charge? He's a criminal. There's a lack of honesty in this conversation from the word go. So Pilate says, "Well, deal with him yourself, for goodness sake." Verse 31, "Take him, so you sort this bloke out." "Ah, there's a problem," they say. "We have no right to execute anyone." But as this whole account makes clear, this took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Jesus had said he was going to die upon a cross. Jews can't do that. They're not allowed to. It's illegal. Only a Roman can impose that sentence. So even though he's in the dock, actually Jesus is still orchestrating things here. And so Pilate grumpily summons Jesus for an interview, which is the guts of this little section. So let's just look at that. We're thinking about truth. Jesus talks about a kingdom of truth. Pilate rejects the truth. And then at the end, there's just a certain irony about it. There's an irony of truth. Let me just very briefly mention these three. The bulk of it is Jesus talking about a kingdom of truth. So verse 32, Pilate is going to fumble around trying to work out who Jesus is. So verse 33, Pilate went back inside the palace. He summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Well, is this your own idea?" Jesus said, "or did others tell you about me?" That's an annoying answer. "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Look, your own people and priests handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" And here's the guts of it. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place. My kingdom is not of this world," says Jesus. And if you think it is, you've misunderstood. But what is he saying there? My kingdom is not of this world. He's not saying that his kingdom is not active in this world or has influence in this world, because it does. He's saying it's not a worldly sort of kingdom. Three brief things about it. Where is the kingdom of Jesus? You won't find it on a map. Even on those weirdy Peter's projection ones that I can never understand. It's not on a map. Because the kingdom of Jesus is a reign. It's a relationship with him. You enter the kingdom by responding to his message, by trusting that he's the king. Where is it? It's not a place as such, it's him. But responding to him. How? How do you get in? Well, you can't buy your way into this kingdom. You can't fight your way into this kingdom. The only way into the kingdom of Jesus is if he invites you and you respond. So I was reading the other day, Richard Branson owns an island, you probably know that, in the British Virgin Islands. He owns Necker Island. He bought it in 1978 for 12 million. It's now worth 200 million. That's a decent investment, isn't it? But the law has changed now in the British Virgin Islands. So you can't, no matter how wealthy you are, you can be a billionaire like Roman Abramovich, you can no longer buy an island. if you were daydreaming about it, which was quite a nice daydream, but you're not allowed anymore. You're only natives to the country are allowed to buy one of the British Virgin Islands. So you can't buy one. And in fact, you can't go to Necker Island because Richard Branson owns it. The only way in is if he says, come. And the only way into the kingdom of Jesus is when he says, come. You can't buy your way in, but I will pay for you. You don't deserve to be here, but I would die for you to bring you in. So how do you get into the kingdom? It is by trusting that Jesus has paid for you to get in. You don't deserve it, but in his death he pays for your mistakes. So you can go there. Last thing, when is it? When is it? Well, the kingdom, it begins, it's open now, but it only fully arrives in the future. Just worth knowing those things. In that sense, it's not a kingdom of this world. Where is it? It's not on a map. It's belonging to Jesus, following him. How do you get in? It's trusting him. When? Well, you can join now, but you'll only physically enjoy it in the future. So Jesus says, "This my kingdom is not of this world." And verse 36, you don't need a sword. My servants don't fight to get in. And of course, that is entirely radical. It's a fairly distinct thing of the reign of Jesus, the kingdom of Jesus. It doesn't grow with the sword. Most kingdoms do. The kingdom of Islam has come with the sword. The secular kingdoms of history have come with the sword. You may have heard this. This is quite a well-known quote, I think, of Napoleon's. He was quite good with a sword, or moving his men around with their swords. I don't think he was a believer, but he made this comment. I know men, and I tell you, Jesus Christ is no mere man. Between him and every other person in the world, there is no possible term of comparison. Alexander the Great, Caesar, Charlemagne, and I have founded empires. Very modest of him, but there he is. I guess it was true. But on what did we rest the creation of our genius? Okay, not a modest man, but run with it. Upon force, upon the sword. Jesus Christ founded his empire upon love. At this hour and this day, millions across the world would die for him. We do not compare to him. That's very striking, isn't it? And Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. It doesn't come with the sword. Never has done. But yet people will give their lives for him because he is very wonderful. My kingdom is of another place, not of this world. Verse 37, ha ha, says Pilate, you are a king then. Jesus answered, yeah, you say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Now that is a shocking statement, is it? He's on trial for his life and he says to the man, the judge, Pilate, what do you make of me? The most important decision you'll make in your life. I bring you the truth. What do you make of me? It's quite a claim. Mine is a kingdom of truth. Now many kingdoms are not built on truth. Many of them are built on lies, in fairly obvious ways. I read recently an interview that the finance minister of Zimbabwe gave to the Cape Times of South Africa. He, quote, we do not have a problem with starving in Zimbabwe. We call it fasting when people don't eat. Fasting is good for you. The people will be encouraged to fast, and therefore they will strengthen themselves against the onslaught of colonial imperialism. Those of us in government, sadly, all of us have to eat, but only because people in our important positions have to. Ouch. Ouch. I think that's called spin on a famine taking place. That's a kingdom built on lies, obviously. Well, some careers are built on lies. Did you read, it was very striking, The Lancet, not my normal reading, but it's made the new mainstream newspapers. Richard Horton is the editor of The Lancet, the medical journal. This last month, did you read this? He caused a bit of a fuss in February because he wrote this. The case against science is straightforward.
much of scientific literature and research, perhaps half, is simply untrue. Ouch. The reason is that cash-strapped academics in universities competing for money will write whatever is required to receive a grant. So you get all correct. So, ouch. Ouch. And he's right, you know, he's the editor of The Lancet saying, you know what, half the papers in my magazine are probably lies that people have just written in order to get some cash. Ouch. And Jesus comes along and says, I'm truth. He stands before Pilate and says, I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth. I am the most important figure of all of time and all eternity. I'm standing in front of you. I'm gazing at you face to face and saying to you, Pilate, how do you see it? What do you make of me? Because I am truth. And you'll either accept me and reject me or reject me. But what will it be? And very striking. He says to you and me, what do you make of me? Jesus says, I'm truth. I claim to be the truth. I claim to speak the truth. How do you see it? I'm the truth. Jesus claims to have a kingdom of truth. But Pilate and many today, they'll reject the truth. So Pilate comes back with him. Well, so it's quite a clever answer, verse 38. What is truth? I don't know how he says it. Might be on the back foot. Oh, what is truth? He may be a bit more forceful. What is truth? We don't know that. But it's a politician's answer. I don't really care about the truth. I care about what works. I care about what keeps keeping the crowd quiet so I can go back to my sunbed on the med. I care about keeping my position. Who cares what's true as long as I get what I want? Tony Blair, intriguingly, has commented on Pontius Pilate. I have sympathy with Pilate. He is the archetypal politician caught on the horns of a dilemma. Well, there you go. That's how Tony Blair sees himself. I don't know what he washes his hands off, but there it is. What is truth? Says the politician. A whole new word was coined for Hillary Clinton of truthiness. Did you know that? It was actually last time round in the primaries where she lost to Barack Obama. Do you remember this one? Because she was asked about something she said. So Hillary Clinton claimed she'd come under fire in Bosnia in 1996. And then this was demonstrated to be completely untrue, that she'd never been anywhere near the war zone and never been under fire. This was put to her by a journalist and she replied, you just lied and exaggerated, didn't you, Mrs. Clinton? I did not. Unfortunately, I misspoke. Yeah. Which means, I don't know what. And so there's much play in the media, and from that date, and it's now entered the dictionary, the concept of truthiness. You know, it's not true, but it kind of almost is near-ish, sort of. I mean, I felt like I was being shot at, so kind of the same as being shot at. It's sort of a bit like that. Truthiness. I mean, lots of people are happy to live that way. But here, of course, the dismissive question that Pilate asks allows him to just push away Jesus. There's Jesus saying, I am the truth. Do you believe or do you reject? And your eternity rests on that. And Pilate says, well, I don't believe there is a truth. And that is enormously contemporary. I don't know what you think. Personally, I'm sure there'll be people you know. You say, what do you make of Jesus? Well, I don't know. All religions are sort of the same-ish, aren't they? Or there's all something out there spiritual, but no one really quite knows what it is. They're all true. None of them, you know. So just a refusal to engage. Well, I don't know. Who knows what the truth is? I don't know. You don't know. It sounds very humble, but it's just a refusal to engage on a fairly central question. Do you agree or not? What is truth? One of the most striking and honest examples I read of this was Aldous Huxley. I don't know if you ever come across much of his writings. He's writing this half a century ago, explaining why he pursued a philosophy, an existentialism of meaninglessness, i.e. there is no truth. Let me read it. Let me explain. He puts it this way. For myself, I pursued a philosophy of meaninglessness as an instrument of liberation. I wanted liberation from morality. We objected to the morality because it interfered with our sexual freedom. People told us, you can't do that. You can't live that way. It's not truth. There was an admirably simple method of confronting these people and at the same time justifying whatever we wanted to do in our political and, more importantly, erotic and sexual behaviour. We would deny that there was any truth, that the world had any meaning. That's a pompous philosophical way of saying it. But I guess it comes down more... You can't do that, you say to someone today. You can't just sleep around with multiple sexual partners when you're married. Why not? Who says? Says who? It's very contemporary. What Aldous Huxley did half a century ago. It's what Pilate's doing centuries and centuries ago. What do you make of me, Pontius Pilate? I am truth. And how you respond to me will determine where you spend your eternity, says Jesus. Well, I'm not sure there is any such thing as truth, so I don't have to engage with you. Extraordinary. Extraordinary. It's a very crazy way to live. God is our loving creator. He made us to enjoy life in his world, enjoy him. And we're saying, well, I don't know. It's a bit like buying a DVD player. You just throw away the instructions and try and cook your toast in it. In the bread, you shove the thing in and click the thing in there. Actually, you probably fuse it enough and you probably will get slightly charred bread out of it. I guess it would sort of kind of work. I'll just do things. I don't, who cares what the maker says? Who cares that worlds are, I just do it whatever I want, my way. But you'd say to someone, you're nuts. It's just, you're not meant to live like that. And yet on the larger scale, how we live our lives, there's a creator who set out a pattern for living. Oh, who cares about that? I'm just doing things my own way. What is truth? Is there truth? I don't know. As long as I'm content. Jesus says, I've come and mine is a kingdom of truth. People will reject the truth just by denying there is such a thing. And then very briefly, we get more to this next time. There's a certain irony in the last couple of verses. Let me pick it up, verse 38. What is truth? Retorted Pilate. With this he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, I find no basis for a charge against him, but given that I'm a politician, I like to keep everyone happy and I don't want, you know, to kick up a fuss, etc. But, verse 39, it's your custom for me to release you, one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the King of the Jews? And they shouted back, no, not him. Give us Barabbas. Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. And no doubt Pilate was thinking, well, this is bonkers. This is completely ironic. I stand up in front of the crowd and say, this man Jesus is innocent. There is no charge against him. So shall I release him? No, they say. Release the one we all know is guilty. I say, what? You're a lot of mad. But fine. I'm not a man of integrity. I'm a man who bends in the wind in order to keep people happy. I'm a politician. I don't care about what's true. This man is clearly innocent. This man is obviously guilty of inciting rebellion. Fine, you can have Barabbas. And he, no doubt, he walks away. See, next time he washes his hands of the matter. But of course he goes away knowing that he's done the wrong thing. That the innocent one will die and the guilty one may go free. But in that, there's just a picture of the whole Christian message. That's why it's here. Because, of course, what Jesus has been teaching for the last 18 chapters of John's Gospel is all of us are guilty of rejecting our Creator, of mistreating one another. We're all guilty of that. Jesus is not. And yet when he dies upon the cross, the innocent one is punished so that the guilty may go free. It's deeply ironic or profoundly life-giving. But that's the truth, says Jesus. What do you make of me? I am truth. What do you make of me? The question he puts to Pilate is one, of course, it's one he puts to you and me. Let me lead us in prayer. Father, on one level, it's extraordinary that an incident 2,000 years ago is so contemporary. On another level, no, not at all. Human nature is still the same. it, even though Jesus is remarkably clear and says everyone on this planet has to come to terms with who he is, whether to trust him and enter his kingdom or not. Yet still we'll try and find ways of denying that, of avoiding the question, of throwing smoke or dust in the air and say, well, we can't see what is truth. Father, help us to see that Jesus is the truth and respond to him with trust, we pray. Amen.